Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to 15 Minutes on Latin America, which today is going to be longer than 15 minutes. This is Fausta Words of faustasblog.com, and today is Thursday, April 2nd, and I have the honor of having two special guests, Romulo Lopez Jr., who is the son of an Ecuadorian journalist, and Eneas Biglione of ACER. And welcome, Romulo and Eneas.
Yeah, thanks, Fausta, for your invitation to the show.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you.
Since the listeners to the podcast are not familiar with this story, we have to start from the very beginning. First of all, the Ecuadorian currency is – Ecuadorian has a dollarized economy. And
correct.
There are a number of problems right now because of that. So let's talk about that for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ecuador decided to take dollarization back in 1999 after one of the biggest hyperinflations that we had in the history of our country.
Mm-hmm.
It was a $400 hyperinflation. Anything above 100% of inflation, it's called hyperinflation. It was not as big as the Bolivia hyperinflations or the Germany the hyperinflations back in the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
But this was definitely something significant, something that meant that if you were earning $1,000 today, at the end of the year, you're earning only a quarter of what you were supposed to earn.
Right.
So the Ecuadorian government at that time took the decision of dollarizing the economy, and within a week that government failed due to popular protests, especially from the Indian population in the country. Now, regardless of that, the vice president who took over, he was able to continue with the dollarization process. And after a painful process, because the dollarization was done with a devaluation of
the currency.
Yes, an extra devaluation. I mean, not at the market rate, but with more, I mean, going from 10,000 sucres per dollar to 25,000 sucres per dollar, we were able to be fully dollarized with coins circulating around the country with currency bills, everything. And right now, if you go to Ecuador, I mean, as any person who has visited in the last 10 years, you can pay with dollars, U.S. dollars, and there's no local currency besides the coins that are usually for payments of like buses and that sort of things, like small things, because coins are difficult to transport and they're like very heavy, so it's actually cheaper for the government just to, instead of buying the currencies to the U.S. Federal Reserve, to have them done. Hello?
We're still here.
Yes.
I'm not sure what happened there, but anyway.
Okay. That's pretty much the situation with dollarization in Ecuador. Now, that has been very successful from the point of view that the population has been able, despite the political crisis that we are living in Ecuador, we have had in the last 10 years multiple presidents. I mean, I'm not talking about two or three. I mean, I'm talking about five or six, almost like on an average of 2.5 years per president. We have had a relative economic instability, despite the fact that oil prices are going down, that we have the currently a huge economic crisis around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Ecuador remains in good position. Now, the current problems that we have right now with our decision is the fact that the new government is a government in the same line of Hugo Chavez, and they want to spend their way. I mean, spend. So obviously there's a limit to that. The government cannot print more money to keep spending. And everybody has been talking about the imminent end of dollarization because of that situation.
All right. And then comes this story that there was going to be, there were a lot of rumors, and most of them came from the government itself.
Correct. The government has been like for a while. I mean, from the beginning, the dollarization is like a cantinflada, which is a word meaning that it's just a joke.
Right.
It's a word that comes from comedian Cantinflas, Mexican comedian. So it was just a joke that it didn't make sense, that it was hurting the poor people, that they did not like dollarization, that they're going to get out of it, that the end of the dollar is near and everything. And they have been talking all a while. I mean, the ministers, the president himself, the president wrote a paper. He's an economist training here in the U.S. at the University of University in Illinois. So he even wrote a thesis. I mean, he's saying that this is definitely something bad for a global economy. I don't believe that. I actually think that has shielded the population of Ecuador from the political instability that we suffer chronically in the country, and that has served as some sort of like a straitjacket for the government to stop spending. They have to stop spending at some point, and that point is when they're not gonna be able to get any more lending, or the oil revenue falls down because the government is either not producing sufficient or the price of oil is going down. At that point, the government will have to go home. I mean, dollarization will remain in place if that happens. But obviously, the government doesn't want to go home. I mean, they don't want to recognize that spending their way completely is going to, or it's a wise thing to do. So obviously, they are preparing the terrain for doing this. Now, here's what happened with my dad in regards to this. I mean, he decided to publish an article about the imminent dollarization with a rumor that has been going around. I mean, it's a rumor. Nobody knows if it's true or not. I mean, their facts are difficult to prove. The government is hard at recognizing those, but my dad had the courage to say whatever everybody has been saying through emails, through news, through everything, and that was his big mistake.
And I should point out that the official newspaper, El Telégrafo, was
mm-hmm.
saying that President Correa was the one who started talking about the possibility of implementing a different currency.
Well, the President Correa has been saying this, and actually the first one who pointed out to this fact after the government was very annoyed by my dad's article was an economic analyst who appeared on a huge show that has a big rating in the mornings, and he was saying if the government is going to start suing people for spreading rumors about the de-dollarization or the exit of dollarization,
mm-hmm.
The government should sue themselves. I mean, period. I mean, because
right.
It's the minister, former minister, the president himself who had been saying all along about this. They're the ones who are not giving to the general population assurances that dollarization is not going to continue. So people feel nervous about it, and rumors start spreading out. Now, I don't know if the rumor is right or not. The fact of the matter was that the government had to acknowledge my dad wrote an article on Tuesday. The government got annoyed on Wednesday. And on Thursday night, the government, the minister of the government said, I mean, yes, we did brought some containers with currency, but it was dollars, not the new currency that my dad was mentioning in that rumor that had been circulating. And the fact of the matter was that they had to recognize that there had been some strange movements around with containers full of money. Now, they did not prove anything. They did not prove that it was full of dollars because they just were showing like a warehouse, and they had multiple boxes with currency apparently. And they only open one box. There's no connection
Let's hold on for a moment here, because there is another story involved about the containers. Ineas?
Yes.
Are you still here? Okay.
Yes.
Now, Ineas, you sent me the article that said that the containers were coming from Iran. So if you could expand on that.
That is what Romulo Lopez Abando was saying in his article. He was claiming the currency was coming through Chile and coming, you know, through Chile from Iran, and that was supposed to be the Condor. That's the new name. I mean, the name of the new currency.
Yeah, that would be the name for the new currency, not what is being used right now, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We should remind the audience that something important to remember is that if Correa wants to stop, to put an end to dollarization, the key factor is surprise. You know, they have to do it without Ecuadorians knowing it. They have to usually do it like overnight, you know. Otherwise, it would be a big problem, you know, with the financial operators doing something against that or protecting themselves from
right.
the devaluation.
Because this would bring a whole different, this would actually open a whole different kind of worms as to, you know, speculation and currency trades and all sorts of other things that Correa really doesn't want to get the country into, because it devalues the currency even further.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and one thing that really, really is really interesting to know is that the overreaction of Correa to this case is kind of proving that the economist was right. You know, that Romulo López Abando was correct in what he was saying. Otherwise, it makes no sense, you know, to pay so much attention to an article like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also it's important to remember.
Romulo.
Yeah.
Romulo, go on with what your dad wrote. Romulo López Abando is Romulo's dad, so go on with what
yes.
your dad wrote at that time.
Well, my dad wrote in this container about these containers probably coming from Iran. The reason being is, I mean, and you have to speculate about that. I mean, if you send an order to print notes to the Royal Bank of Canada or any of the other printers that are out there, I mean, definitely you need to have, I mean, you are making the U.S. government aware of that, or any of the Western governments. So
mm-hmm.
the most likely scenario is that we have been, I mean, not we, but our government has been turning itself friends of Iran and all these powers around the world. I mean, not powers, but the governments that are like dictatorial. Pretending to be friends and making treaties and all these sort of things. I mean, there's no economic relationship between Iran and Ecuador.
Because that was my next question. That was going to be my next question. Why Iran?
Well, we don't know. I mean, it's just because President Hugo Chavez is friend of President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and thus President Correa is a friend of him too. I mean, but there's no economic relationship with them. I mean. So this is a measure, I mean, this is a political move that is going to isolate the country from the rest of the world, because Iran is in the list of countries that you should not deal with. And
mm-hmm.
there's no reason to do that. There's no economic relationship. There's no people from Iran living in Ecuador. There are no flights, I mean, until very recently. I mean, I've heard that, and again, this might be said that it's a rumor or something like that, but no. I mean, I've heard that there's even like a once-a-week flight now to Iran. I mean, to what? That is the question. I mean, that is exactly the same thing. So the rumor said that it was Iran. I mean, it could have been Iran, it could have been China, it could have been North Korea. Why? Because they are the ones who have the capability of not telling the U.S. government that they are going to de-dollarize. And second, they have the technology to print currency, even fake dollars.
Uh-huh.
So,
and that's very important too, because
mm-hmm.
there is a lot of counterfeit money circulating right now, most of it which apparently is in dollars.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised, and again, I don't have any facts to prove it, but I wouldn't be surprised that there bringing fake U.S. dollars into Ecuador and then throwing them to circulate. And since the government is so reckless that it's not willing to recognize that they're dealing with the devil here, to just turn the blind eye to that. I mean, I just pretend that there's nothing happening. And in fact, what they're making is the central bank of Ecuador, which is still existing. I mean, it doesn't make sense to have a central bank in a dollarized economy, but we have one. I mean, into some sort of like a counterfeiter too, because they're the ones
right.
including the in dollars.
So
I mean, this is just a supposition of me.
I mean, this is not a fact,
and I don't want to make
here.
A rumor out of it.
Right. I mean, and let's make clear that this is pure speculation, The problem is that Iran and Chavez vowed several years ago to bring down the dollar. So we are speculating as to whether there was some kind of counterfeit involved. However, the story that was first going around was that the new currency, which was going to be the Condor, mm-hmm. would be coming in from Iran. And that was the original rumor. I mean, we have speculated as to counterfeiting, but, you know, the original story is that the Condor was going to be coming in. And then what
Correct.
Happened?
Well, then what happened? I mean, the Bloomberg, I mean, all the newspapers in Ecuador obviously started the president called into a press conference into his office. I mean, this is very serious. I mean, this is not regularly done. And I mean, when the president called into his office, I mean, that means that it's a serious thing. He was very annoyed, very distressed, and he said that anyone spreading rumors, and he was holding in his hand my dad's op-ed and showing it to the press, will be incarcerated. Okay. And obviously everybody started calling my dad, telling him, hey, I mean, Correa is a little bit annoyed about this, and blah, blah, blah. And then he's getting, like, random calls of people telling him, from unknown people, telling him that he better shut up or they're going to do something to him. So my dad had to pretty much go in hiding. I mean, the reaction of the president was covered by Bloomberg. And my dad's... problem. I mean, he reported that in his article that was going to appear in the op-ed this last Tuesday. Unfortunately, the newspaper, I don't know under what pressures, denied to publish that one in particular. Mm. This is a newspaper in which he has been publishing op-eds for the last 10 years. So, and he has a very good and friendly relationship with the directors of it. So, I don't know what kind of like pressures they're receiving from the government, but they decided just to be safe, I mean, not to publish my dad's explanation of the issue, I mean, of all the ordeal that had been going, because he had to hide himself, basically. At that point, he was called, I mean, somebody on Thursday morning put an accusation saying that my dad had violated the Article 606 of the Penal Code of Ecuador.
Yeah.
Which is
let me read, before we go on that, let me read the article mm-hmm. at Bloomberg, because this was the only, as far as I could find, news service who actually covered it. And it started, Correa threatens jail, I mean, in English language, Correa threatens jail for spreading rumors.
The Wall Street Journal also did a little note. It didn't.
Right. The Wall Street Journal had a small item, yeah.
Yeah.
Correa threatens jail for spreading rumors on Ecuador currency. Ecuadorian President Rafael Correa said that people spreading rumors about the introduction of a new currency instead of U.S. dollar will be jailed. Rumors of a new currency threaten to destabilize the economy, Correa told reporters today at the presidential palace in Quito. In December, he denied rumors of a forced closure of banks. So we have a government under a lot of pressure here. Quote, mm-hmm. The president guarantees to you that there is no plan whatsoever to exit dollarization. He said it's another vile calumny by eternal opponents who hope to win a few notes in the next elections. Ecuador introduced the dollar as its currency a decade ago amid financial crisis that caused almost 2,000 banks to collapse. While he has criticized the way the dollar was introduced on several occasions, Correa, who stands for re-election on April 26th, and that is the last Sunday this month, said that there are signs Ecuador will be able to weather the global economic crisis without resorting to a change in the currency. Thank God we have been able to manage this crisis adequately, Correa said. Quote, the price of oil has recovered markedly. Correa said it was rumored that the government had ordered new currency minted in Iran and imported in 11 containers via Chile. The government won't allow these ill-intentioned rumors to continue, Correa said. Ecuadorian oil, the country's key export, is currently being sold at about $45 a barrel above an initially budgeted $35 a barrel for the first quarter. Earlier today, Central Bank President Carlos Vallejo said Ecuador needs about $100.5 billion in loans from multilateral lenders to defend the use of the U.S. currency. the money is required to maintain an adequate dollar inflows. Vallejo said he expects the Inter-American Development Bank, Caracas-based Development Lender Corporación Andina de Fomento, and the Latin American Reserve Fund to approve the loans. Strains on the banking system and falling reserves could force Ecuador to introduce a new currency, Credit Suisse wrote in a research report on March 18. So there is pressure on the economy. There's the rumor that the 11 containers coming from Iran via Chile had a new currency, and then there's an election in a little over 3 weeks. So Correa now is turning the screws on the media, and that's when the arrest warrant was issued on your dad. And then what happened?
Well, this is what happened, and this is the kind of things that are incredible in third world countries. I mean, the government issues this arrest warrant. My dad has to go in hiding, basically, because of all the threats. He's been called into to declare and give his version, but obviously he was not. He was supposed to be called three times before he was given a sentence in absence.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do it at the third. They did it at the first. They send the notice not to him or his home, but to the newspaper. And what ended up happening is that he had to go in hiding because he had a fear for his life. I mean, in the past, the Ecuadorian government has illegally imprisoned politicians, and the last one was defended by the Human Rights Foundation, the governor of the province of Orellana, almost a year ago, in which she was in prison for 9 months without the trial or anything, and then she was released without trial. I mean, so there's no way to trust the government that they're going to honor that. I mean, they're going to put him on a jail, and who knows for how long, without any sort of trial.
He's not hiding because he is guilty.
He's hiding because
right.
he doesn't trust, and nobody trusts the Ecuadorian
justice system. Okay, because one thing that we discussed before we started the podcast is that the arrest warrant is in a sealed case. So
Well, this is the other strange thing that happened. And I'm not sure about the fact that if Ecuador also have sealed cases. Okay, but at least in my dad's case,
mm-hmm.
since that the trial or the arrest warrant specifically, it's sealed. That meaning that nobody can see the arrest warrant until he's caught. At that time, that's kind of like late. There's no way for him to defend himself, and there's no way for him to claim a political asylum in any other country of the world because there's no legal proof that he has been persecuted. Okay. So it's a very evil way of doing things. So he has no right to defend himself. He has no right to claim political asylum. And he has to remain in hiding until who knows when, for how long. Obviously, I mean, the thing is that if he decides to go out, if he's not able to prove that he's a political, this is a political prosecution because they can, since it's sealed, they can hide the arrest warrant and disappear it. He'll always be illegal here in the U.S. or in any other country of the world without even able to work or do or continue his life as normal as he could be being in exile. So it's a very pressing situation. It's a very difficult one. I've spoken with a couple of human rights organizations. I don't want to say who they are until they're able to help me out somehow. But they were telling me that it's very hard for them to argue in my dad's favor if there's no legal document behind that. I told them, yes. I mean, that's the point. Now, the government keeps mentioning about that they're going to incarcerate people that are going to be spreading rumors. But they don't mention my dad's name. But everybody points to my dad's article as the one that started all this. As a matter of fact, Bloomberg linked to my dad's article as the source of a vile calumny. When they say vile calumny, there's a link to my dad's article. So definitely the thing is targeted to him. Right now we're trying to see, I mean, what are his options? I mean, how he can get off hiding or get some sort of like access to the arrest warrant to at least ask for political asylum somewhere. I mean, right now that's all he can do at this point.
So, Inez.
Yes, I wanted to add something about that. And this is far from an isolated case. You know, if you visit the Inter-American Press Association website, that I think it's IAPA.org, you will find extensive, you know, reports about the violation, you know, to free speech and free press in Ecuador for a long time. It's important to remember that presidential elections are coming on April 19th, and Correa have been linked to huge scandals lately. One related to his administration's link with the FARC, you know, the terrorist group in Colombia,
mm-hmm.
and now we all sort of suspect that he's trying to cover that up, you know, with all this scandal that they just created. You know?
So, if we can speculate for a second. What happens if there is a devaluation prior to an election?
Well, if that happens, I mean, that will be the end of the government. Obviously, the other candidates, in my opinion, they're not that great, in part because Correa managed to allow only candidates that were, like, not good or not very popular, and he got rid of all the good ones. So I don't know if he will lose election given that the options are not that great. Now, having said that, I mean, his violent reaction and anger towards my dad's article means that you might see that as a real possibility, that he might lose the election if something like that happens before the election. Now, I don't know if that will happen before. I mean, most likely if it happens, it will happen afterwards. And at that point, it will be too late for Ecuadorians because then we'll be caught in the same cycle that we were in the 90s, in which we had the high levels of inflation. The government is spending their way out of as much as they can, following the same pattern of Venezuela, spending, and impoverishing people through inflation. And that will end never. I mean, because basically we've seen in this what I call democratic dictatorships. I mean, these are not the old-fashioned dictatorships in which there were dictatorships, in which there was a Politburo or some sort of like government body which elected the same person over and over and over, like Castro, like for 50 years or more, or like they did in the Soviet Union. I mean, we're going to have this going on with the with the look of a democracy in which people are elected and unfortunately the opposition is not able to win. They're always winning because most of the people is impoverished. They know that if they speak against the government, they face something terrible or worse than what my dad is going through. And there's no other way out. I mean, as a matter of fact, I mean, what they're doing right now is just basically throw you into exile. I mean, like the Cubans are facing right now in Miami for the last 50 years. I mean, that's the only solution. There's no way out. So this is a very important topic. I mean, if we don't want to repeat the Cuban experience in some other country in Latin America, I mean, to give the key to the government to spend, and to allow them to, in that way, win elections, apparently in a legal way, but at the same time impoverishing people and poor people that has a lot to lose if they don't comply with the government mandates.
Well, Inez, let's have some closing words because this has been fascinating. I'm going to write about this at Real Clear World, but I hope that Romulo will be able to find some way. I mean, Romulo López Abando will be able to find some way to come out and be a free man and be able to publish again. So let's have some closing words, Aeneas.
Just wanted to add that it's kind of hard to understand sometimes why people are still supporting Correa. You know, we all think he will win the elections anyway on April 19th. Because there's a lack of opposition that is, you know, coordinated and pushing for one effort towards, you know, free markets and a free and prosperous Ecuador. Meanwhile, there's a lot of crime growing up in Ecuador, and there are some measures that Correa took decided to take, for example, the removal of the Manta base, the American military base in
Manta. Oh, yes.
Manta.
Let's talk about that before we go. Yes.
Yeah,
that's a big
that base. It was devoted, you know, to helping the Correa Gap, the Ecuador government, to fight against drug dealers, basically, and it's really interesting to see how, you know, government is pushing to get the Americans out of Ecuador, and at the same time, there are links with FARC, you know, that we all know that are financed, you know, through drug dealers. And also, the interesting thing is that, for example, there's like two really different reactions between Colombia and Ecuador. Meanwhile, you know, Ecuador is getting rid of the American military base. Colombia is pushing a lot for the Obama administration to move the military base there, you know, where we all know President Uribe is really engaged in the fight against terrorism and narcs, right?
Mm-hmm. So, Correa closes the Manta base. Who is going to use those facilities? Is there any? Do we have any idea, or is it vacant, or what's the
Correa
story?
Correa said he wants the Chinese government to take over that. It is not really clear what for. But the thing is that the lease contract they have, it's, you know, it will expire this year. And then Americans would have to go somewhere else. Yeah.
I have to add something to that. Correa did apparently that, saying that they want the Chinese government, and they contract out with the company Hutchinson Whampoa of Hong Kong to develop some extra facilities in that base and port and everything. I guess that the Chinese, I mean, they spell the fact that sometimes in a weird way, they act a way that didn't like the Correa's government at all. So they decided to kick out the Hutchinson One company because they say that they were not accomplishing the contract. The fact of the matter is that the government didn't put any money besides that, and he was requesting even more money. I mean, this is a bully that we have as a president that tries to renegotiate contracts once they have been signed and does whatever he wants. The same happened to Carlos Slim with the cell phone telephone company. So I don't know if the Chinese are going to be using that base. What I do know is that the Korea, probably a year ago or less than a year ago, 6 months ago, decided to open a new refinery around the area, around Manta, too. Guess who is the government who is going to provide the funds for developing that refinery?
Got to be China.
No, Venezuela.
Venezuela is opening a refinery? They don't even have refineries in their own country.
Well, that's what they were saying 6 months ago, before the whole economic crisis and the oil price coming down.
Where is that coming? What is that going to come to?
I'm sorry?
So, considering Venezuela's economic situation, what's that going, how's that turning out?
I don't know if it's going to happen because, as I told you, that was an announcement made way before the whole current economic crisis happened and the value of the oil went down all the way. But what I do know is that this guy is definitely trying to give some use to this vase, either give it to the Chinese, either give it to the Venezuelan government, or who knows to who else that might come up. I mean, so this is a government that, I mean, they have no shame. They have absolutely no moral in their dealings, and they're willing to deal with the worst of the worst out there just to take their goals ahead. And there's mistake about that. I mean, they are going to proceed about it and do it. They have done it since the beginning of the government. It's true that Ecuador's governments have been unstable, but never in their history we have been dealing with Iran, Venezuela, or China. I mean, all the other previous governments have been, like, maybe corrupt. They have been maybe, you call them whatever you want,
mm-hmm.
but they have never dealt with all these nefarious characters around the world. So this is a different kind of government in Ecuador, and something that you need to pay attention to. I mean, it's something that is going to have an impact with Venezuela around there, now with Ecuador dealing and making strange friendships with weird people and terrorists. I mean, so this is definitely something that requires a lot of attention from the international community. Locally, I mean, there's a group of people, and as Aeneas was saying, I mean, it seems that not much has been done inside the country.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is that more than before, there are a lot of people talking against the government. The problem is that this is a brutal government. This is a government that is handling the law however they want. They
mm-hmm.
have no shame in applying the law to their benefit. And if that means crushing an old guy like my dad, who's 70 years old, they'll do it. I mean, period. I mean, I have no doubt about it. That's the reason why we want to find a solution and get him out somehow. But, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, and they're very savvy in their legal dealings with these things. I mean, so I'm not very happy. I'm very gloomy about the future of Ecuador.
Mm. Now, we're going to end the podcast right now, and I want to thank Aeneas Biglione and Romulo Lopez, and because I also want to point out that tomorrow my mm-hmm. next guest is going to be John Thompson, who wrote an article for National Review Online titled "Subverting Latin Democracy: Hugo Chavez Scores a Victory in El Salvador, Is Panama Next?" And this podcast is related to tomorrow's podcast because Thompson mentions in his article that, let me find, with El Salvador in tow, Chavez has moved one step closer to creating a corridor that extends from Ecuador to the Rio Grande, over which narcotics, arms, Islamist terrorists, and illegal immigrants are already being transported.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to follow up this particular podcast with tomorrow's podcast, and we'll be talking about that. Thank you very much, Romulo and Aeneas, and thank you to everybody in the podcast who listened to the podcast. And I'll be following this up with an article for Real Clear World, too. And we're going to end up with a little music from Herbie Mann for a change in mood. Thank you, guys, and I'll be back tomorrow at 11 in the morning.
Thanks. Bye.